Is it working now? Test one, test two, check, check. I think I can be heard. Not sure, but I think. It's a possibility. Could be wrong. What a pain in the ass. No, I'm sure Sound Minds will let me know here in a minute if he can not hear me talking. Yeah, I hope it's working. Because I'm going to talk. I like listening to music and all, but this is a show about being free and all that. You can listen to music all day long if you want. Granted, it's not as good as probably as, stuff I come up with. But at least in my own opinion. Just... Oh, shit. So, yeah. Anyways, here we go. We're just going to get right into this because we're like 40 minutes into the show and all you've heard is a bunch of music. And I've got more music I want to play. Some brand new Chrome Crucifix. And I got two more By Rebel songs that I want to play. Yeah. The original songs that I wanted to play on the show today. Not just, screwing around trying to cover being live. Here we go. From 404 Media, Trump tariffs cause chaos on eBay as every hobby becomes a logistical minefield. Buying cameras, retro games, board games, skincare, flashlights, sex toys, watches, and anything else from overseas just became far more complicated, slow, and expensive. Imagine that. The Trump administration is throwing various hobbies enjoyed by Americans into chaos and is harming small businesses domestically and abroad with his ever-changing tariff structure that is turning the United States into a hermit kingdom. It has made buying and selling things on eBay particularly annoying and is making it harder and more expensive to, for example, buy vintage film cameras, retro video games, or vintage clothes from Japan, where many of the top eBay sellers are based. Trying to figure out what the future of this hobby is going to look like for those of us in the USA, other than insanely expensive, a post on Our Analog Community, the most popular film photography subreddit, reads, "All of my lenses and all of my camera body came from Japan. They would have been prohibitively expensive now, paying an extra $80 per item. I feel like entry level to this hobby is going to get hit especially hard." Another meme posted to the community under the title "Shopping on eBay Like This Now" reads, "The age of the Canon Mint Plus Plus is over. The time of the Argus C3 has come," referring to a common way that Japanese eBay sellers list Japanese-made Canon cameras. The Argus C3 was a budget mass-produced American-made camera that was not popular in Japan, and so most of the people selling them are in the United States. Some people like them, but it has been nicknamed the Brick because it could serve as a deadly weapon in a street fight. It remains very inexpensive to this day. The photography hobby is a microcosm of what anyone who wants to buy anything from another country is currently experiencing. The de-minimis. Excuse me. Why do I always start yawning when I start talking? The de-minimis exemption, which allowed people to buy things internationally without paying tariffs if the items cost less than $800, made it very easy and less expensive to get into hobbies like film photography, retro video games, and vintage fashion, to name a few. The Trump administration is ending that exemption Friday, well, that was yesterday, and it will quickly become a financial and/or logistical mess for anyone who wants to buy or sell anything from another country. communities and companies focused on electronics, board games, action figures, skin care, flashlights, sex toys, watches, and general e-commerce are also freaking out, stopping service to the United States or telling U.S. customers to expect higher prices, higher fees, longer shipping times, more paperwork, more headache, and unpredictable delays. So, you know, I want to know what happened, you know, just speaking as a U.S. citizen here, a member of the United States. Not one that is from the, I don't know what you want to say, Trump camp. You know, he's gone stupid. His first term, I want the 2016 Trump back, because the Trump from 2025 is just fucking stupid. He's gone full retard. And, yeah, it's not getting any better. yeah, it's one thing to say, okay, we're going to bring up, you know, the whatchamacallit. We're going to increase, you know, tariffs, which is tax. And that gets passed on to the consumers, which is the United States. And he said he was going to cut taxes here, so it would balance out, but he didn't do that. And he's not going to do that, because he rehired all the 80,000 IRS agents that are going to be carrying guns and badges when they come to audit Billy Joe Jim Bob down this, you know, down on Woodbury Lane down in the holler, because he didn't pay his taxes or did his taxes wrong. Y'all got played. I admit I got played, because, you know, this we ain't voting our way out of this mess, people. It ain't happening. Mississippi's digital ID law hits a wall with Mastodon. A state digital ID law is now meeting the very structure of decentralized internet. This is from ReclaimTheNet.org. Mississippi's privacy-ruining online digital ID law is putting pressure on decentralized platforms. And Mastodon says it simply cannot comply. The organization behind the software states that it lacks the technical ability to verify users' ages and refuses to implement IP-based restrictions, which it argues would wrongly affect travelers and those temporarily located in the state. The law known as the Walker-Montgomery Protecting Children Online Act, say that three times as fast, has already led to Blue Sky withdrawing its service from Mississippi. Mastodon is not following that path. Instead, it points to the design of its platform, where individual server administrators are responsible for their own compliance with local laws. Mastodon itself neither collects user data nor maintains centralized control over the network. Although Mastodon's nonprofit arm initially declined to comment, it later provided a statement to TechCrunch. The organization explained that while its own servers require users to be at least 16, it does not have the means to apply age verification, and that the software does not retain any data collected during signup. A feature added in the July 2025 release of Mastodon 4.4 allows server administrators to set age minimums and manage legal terms, but does not support storing verification data. Each server in the network operates independently. It is up to those server owners to decide whether to integrate third-party systems to check user ages. Mastodon confirmed it cannot offer direct or operational assistance to these operators, and instead points them to resources such as the IFTTS library, which provides guidance on trust and safety practices for federated platforms. The nonprofit reiterated that it does not track user behavior or enforce policy across the wider ecosystem. Responsibility for legal compliance, it says, belongs to those who host and manage the servers in their own jurisdictions. So you see, this is going to be where decentralized wins. And that's what they're trying to get away from, is, you know, decentralization. Oh, no, I don't want to join your free newsletter. Okay, this is another one from 404 Media. Almost every state has its own deepfakes law now. Michigan just became the 48th state to enact a law addressing deepfakes, imposing jail time and penalties up to the felony level for people who make AI-generated, non-consensual abuse imagery of a real person. It's now illegal in Michigan to make AI-generated sexual imagery of someone without their written consent. Michigan joins 47 other states in the U.S. that have enacted their own deepfake laws. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed the bipartisan-sponsored House Bills 4047 and its companion bill 4048 on August 26th in a press release. Whitmer specifically called out the sexual uses for deepfakes. These videos can ruin someone's reputation, career, and personal life. As such, these bills prohibit the creation of deepfakes that depict individuals in sexual situations and create sentencing guidelines for the crime. The press release states, "That's something we've seen time and time again with the victims of deepfake harassment, who've told us over the course of the 6 years since consumer-level deepfakes first hit the internet, that the most popular application of this technology has been carelessness and vindictiveness against the women its users target, and that sexual harassment using AI has always been its most popular use. Making a deepfake of someone is now a misdemeanor in Michigan, punishable by imprisonment of up to a year and fines up to $3,000 if they knew or reasonably should have known that the creation, distribution, dissemination, or reproduction of the deepfake would cause physical, emotional, reputational, or economic harm to an individual falsely depicted. And if the deepfake depicts the target engaging in a sexual act and is identifiable by a reasonable individual viewing or listening to the deepfake, the law states. This is all before the deepfake's creator posts it online. It escalates to a felony if the person is depicted suffers a financial loss, the person making the deepfake intended to profit from it, or if the person maintains a website or app for the purposes of creating deepfakes, or if they posted it to any website at all, if they intended to harass, extort, threaten, or cause physical, emotional, reputational, or economic harm to the depicted individual, or if they have a previous conviction. The law specifically says that this isn't to be construed to make platforms liable, but the person making the deepfakes, but we already have federal law in place that makes potential liable, or platforms liable. The tools to address known exploitation. Sorry. Tired. But we already have federal law is in place that makes platforms liable. The tools to address known exploitation by immobilizing technological deepfakes on websites and networks, or Take It Down Act, introduced by Ted Cruz in June 24. That's probably, you know, knowing Ted Cruz, I was mainly towards protecting Israel. In June 2024, and signed into law in May this year, made platforms liable for not moderating deepfakes and imposes extremely short timelines for acting on AI-generated abuse imagery reports from users. That law has drawn a lot of criticism from civil liberties and online speech activists for being too overbroad. As The Verge pointed out, before it became law, because the Trump administration's FTC is in charge of enforcing it, it could easily become a weapon against all sorts of speech, including constitutionally protected free speech. Platforms that feel confident that they are unlikely to be targeted by the FTC, for example, platforms that are closely aligned with the current administration, may feel emboldened to simply ignore reports of NC2. The Cyber Civil Rights Initiative told The Verge in April, platforms attempting to identify authentic complaints may encounter a sea of false reports that could overwhelm their efforts and jeopardize their ability to operate at all. If you do not have the perfect technology to identify whatever it is we're calling a deepfake, you're going to get a lot of guessing. Wow. You're going to get a lot of guessing be done by the social media companies, and you're going to get disproportionate amounts of censorship, especially for marginalized groups. Kate Ruin, an attorney and director of the Center for Democracy and Technology's Free Expression Project, told me in June 2024, my God, would you guys stop with these long-ass names for bills or laws or even some, obviously it's got to be getting money from the government somewhere. That name, dude. The Center for Democracy and Technology's Free Expression Project. You couldn't come up with something shorter than that? God damn. Anyways, for a social media company, it is not rational for them to open themselves up to that risk, right? It's simply not. And so my concern is that any video with an amount of editing, which is like every single TikTok video, is then banned for distribution on those social media sites. Anyways, on top of the Take It Down Act, at the state level, deepfakes laws are either pending or enacted in every state except New Mexico and Missouri. In some states like Wisconsin, the law only protects minors from deepfakes by expanding the child sexual abuse imagery laws. Even as deepfakes legislation seems to finally catch up to the nation, or to the notion that AI-generated sexual abuse imagery is abusive, reporting this kind of harassment is to authorities or pursuing civil action against one's own abuser is still difficult, expensive, and traumatizing in most cases. So, yeah. Dude, this is the problem. We live in a fake world. There's like nothing real anymore. You can get out, go outside, touch grass, do things, you know, see people in real life. But then you know they're not that way online because you see them in the, you know, it's fake. You know, we've got all these freaking fake ass news stories. There's everything is so damn fake. Oh,
nation a trap. Bite rebels, hit us, spit truth. Let's rip through the map. Trapped in a grid, yeah, the world's a facade. Digital chains, we're pawns in their squad. Big tech's got us wired, they're pulling the code. Feeding us fakes while our freedom erodes. Scrolling through feeds, it's a dopamine hit. Likes and retweets, man, it's all counterfeit. They know what you think, what you fear, what you crave. AI's got your soul, you're a digital slave. Plugged in, numbed out, we're losing the fight. Gaslit by screens in the dead of the night. They want us to kneel, keep us locked in the game. But I'm screaming out loud, I'm bringing the free. Corporations feast while we're fed their illusion. 24-7 streams, it's a grand collusion. Binging the shows, keep us fat and distracted. Truths getting buried, our minds are abducted. Influencers grin, pushing trends that they sell. While the media spins lies, it's a digital hell. Very wiring brains with their rival designs. Keeping us docile, trapped in their lines. Plugged in, numbed out, we're losing the fight. Gaslit by screens in the dead of the night. They want us to kneel, keep us locked in the game. But I'm screaming out loud, I'm bringing the frame.
Fake world, burn it down.
Truth for dead. Every click's tracked, every thought's been mapped. They're selling your soul while the world's in a trap. Big tech and tyrants, they're one and the same. Oppressive regimes fuel this digital flame. They keep us divided, too weak to resist. But I'm spitting this fire, yo, I'm breaking that fast. But there's hope in the dark, there's a spark in your soul. You can shatter their grip, you can take back control. Step out of the screen, feel the ground, breathe the air. The real world's out there and it's out to repair. Together we'll stand with the fire inside.
Fake won't burn it down. Tear the veil apart. Screaming through the static. Ignite the rebel spark.
No more lies, no control. We're taking it back. Break the code. Rise up. Counterattack. Now my eyes are alive. No more bowing down. Yeah, we're built to survive. We're storming the gates. Yeah, the tyrants will fall. Corporations crumble when the people stand tall. Freedom's a fire, it's burning within. No algorithms chain us, no lies can begin. The real world's alive, it's where rebels unite. We're taking it back, yo, we're winning this fight. Plugged in, numbed out, we're losing the fight. Gaslit by screens in the dead of the night. They want us to kneel, keep us locked in the game. Loud, I'm breaking the frame.
Is your business drowning in software costs, tools that don't work together, and privacy risks? Meet Federated Computer, a complete business suite built to simplify your tech stack. Why do forward-thinking companies switch to Federated? No per-user fees, unlimited users. Save up to 75% by replacing tools like Zoom, Slack, Google Workspace, and more. One platform means less context switching and more productivity. 100% private. Your data stays yours. fully customizable with open source flexibility. Whether you are a lean startup or a growing enterprise, Federated adapts to your needs so you save more, work smarter, and protect your business. Ready to simplify your business software and increase profits? Schedule a free demo and see how Federated can transform the way you work. Federated Computer. Streamline, save, and scale.
Yeah, last week I played a new song from a new quote-unquote band, Chrome Crucifix. I'm going to play the rest of that album in this hour. The song I played last week was Iron Fist Lullaby. I played again today. But that was just one of the songs, and it was kind of pretty and creepy all at the same time. I'll tell you a little bit about that song real quick. When I originally wrote it, the song is about a robot singing a lullaby to a little girl. And originally the lyrics was that the robot's basically euthanizing the little girl. I know it's dark and creepy, but the idea behind the story was that it's like The Matrix, the movie The Matrix. Humans are basically batteries, and this is while the Matrix is taking over, and is slowly plugging everybody in to their virtual reality to be their battery for the machines. And that's what the song was about, that process. And it's almost ironically, maybe unironically, ironically, whatever, it's almost the same thing that we have going on in the real world today. At least we think it's a real world. But anyways, I ran the lyrics through Grok. And Grok even suggested that it was a little too dark. So I lightened it up a little bit. I had Grok lighten it up. And I should probably run the lyrics. I wrote a song back years ago, back when I was still driving truck. And me and my buddy John wrote this song called SFU, and that stood for Skull Fuck You. And it wasn't a sexual song. It was it was about a dude that was lifelong friends with a girl, and she continued to be beat by her significant other, not so significant other, I guess, and her friend got tired of watching her being beat and goes after the other guy and basically, skull fucks him into oblivion. But I should probably run those lyrics through Grok, see if that one's a little dark. But anyways, back to Iron Fist Lullaby. What I did was I took the lyrics and went to Gemini and had Gemini, lighten it up a little bit. And at first, Gemini refused to do it. He said it was against its guidelines. I basically asked Gemini to write it within its guidelines, and that's what it lightened it up quite a bit. But it done so good, I had it do the artwork too for the image. And at first it argued with me that it couldn't give me the artwork I wanted, until I changed the little girl into a robot on the artwork, and then it did it. Then when I tried to get it to do some editing of it, and it said it couldn't do it because the artwork was too graphic and it wasn't within its guidelines. And I'm like, you're the one that created the artwork. And it says, I did not. But anyways, that was funny. But I thought that was hilarious. But yeah. So anyways, screw it. Let's start with Chrome Crucifix. The first song is Bloodlines of Solace.
Every tear is a vow.
Yeah, that was a Chrome Crucifix, Bloodlines of Solace. The artwork for that is a family of vampires, cyberpunk vampires, which has really nothing to do with what the song is about. But I thought it was kind of cool. The song is about family first thing. No matter what your political differences are in your family, it's hard to all be together on the same page when it comes to things. But it is what it is. And you have to make your choices. Everybody makes their own choices. So that's what the song's about. Protect your family. Family first. Fuck the government. Family's where it's at. Microsoft Word to save new files to the cloud by default. Yes! I always wanted an operating system that just kind of does my shit for me. Makes my choices for me. Local saves become legacy as Microsoft nudges Word users into the cloud with every new document. Microsoft is preparing to change how documents are saved in Word for Windows, shifting new file storage to the cloud by default. Instead of asking users to activate autosave or select a cloud location manually, Word will now store all newly created documents directly in OneDrive or another designated cloud service automatically. Raul Munoz, a product manager at Microsoft's Office Shared Services and Experiences team, that's too goddamn much too for a title, described the change by saying, "We are modernizing the way files are created and stored in Word for Windows. Now you don't have to work. You're modernizing. Bullshit. You're forcing people, hoping that they will buy and give you money for your stupid subscription to your online backup or online storage. Because you sat and you watched Google and Apple make shit tons of money over the last 15, 20 years by offering this as a service. And now nobody wants to buy your stupid fucking OneDrive because it's just another stupid service that all you're going to do is go through and read people's shit because that's what you do. And nobody wants to buy it, so you're forcing people to buy it now. Anyways, now you don't have to worry about saving your documents. Yeah, there's this little thing in pretty much every software that programmers put in there. It's called autosave, and it autosaves it locally. It doesn't autosave it to some. Yeah. Anyways, anything new you create will be saved automatically to OneDrive or your preferred cloud destination. Currently being rolled out to Microsoft 365 Insiders, this new setup is presented as a way to prevent lost work and provide immediate access to files across mobile platforms and browsers. However, for anyone working outside Microsoft's cloud ecosystem, this change introduces additional steps to avoid online storage. The update also comes with adjustments to how documents are named rather than appending sequential numbers to new files. Word will now assign file names based on the date of creation. Thank you for not only forcing us to use your stupid bullshit OneDrive, but now you're just going ahead and changing the way we name our files. Fucking Microsoft. Users will have the option to set a preferred default save location or opt out of automatic cloud saves entirely, though doing so requires manual reconfiguration. Microsoft has been steadily nudging its user base toward cloud reliance. Autosave already defaults to cloud storage, and persistent prompts in Windows have encouraged or pressured users to turn on OneDrive backups. These reminders have drawn complaints, especially from those who feel Microsoft is eroding straightforward local file access. Yes, they are. This latest move by Microsoft reflects a broader trend among tech giants to steer users toward cloud-based ecosystems, often at the cost of individual choice and control. It's all part of the end game. You will own nothing and be happy. If it's not on your local computer, do you really own it? If you only have access to it when they allow you to have access, do you really own anything? While the company already offers a fully online version of Word, tailored for those who want cloud integration, many who rely on the desktop application do so precisely to avoid having their documents stored online. By turning local storage into a secondary option that requires extra effort, Microsoft is making it harder for users to keep their files on their own machines. Cloud storage may promise convenience, but it also introduces new risks. When documents are saved by default to servers controlled by corporations, users give up a measure of privacy and autonomy. Data stored in the cloud is subject to surveillance, data mining, and potential breaches, realities that are far less of a concern with locally stored files. See, there's lots of reasons why they want it online. They want you to keep your data online. Not only is it just, you know, because they can scan it and double check there ain't nothing bad or illegal. They can, you know, they control you. They control your data. They control you, yourself, your choices. After that, they could also scan it and use it to train their AI for free on your data. Are you guys getting it yet? I keep asking that. Are you getting it? AI generated boring history videos are flooding YouTube and drowning out real history. These AI videos are just repeating things that are on the internet, so you end up with a very simplified version of the past. As I do most nights, I was listening to YouTube videos to fall asleep the other night. Sometime around 3 a.m., I woke up because the video YouTube was autoplaying started going, fee! The video was called Boring History for Sleep, How Medieval Peasants Survived the Coldest Nights and More. It's 2 hours long, has 2.3 million views. And an hour and 15 minutes into the video, the AI-generated voice glitched in the end, and Boylan won a kind of immortality, not through her survival, but through her indelible impact on history. Fee, the narrator says in a fake British accent. By the early 1770s, the American colonies simmered like a pot left too long over a roaring fire, it continued. The video was from a channel I hadn't seen before called Sleepless Historian. I took my headphones out, didn't think much of it at the time, rolled over and fell back asleep. The next night when I went to pick a new video to fall asleep to, my YouTube homepage was full of videos from Sleepless Historian and several similar sounding channels like Boring History Bites, History Before Sleep, The Snoozatorian, Historian Sleepy, and Dreamoria. Lots of these videos nominally checked boxes for what I want from something to fall asleep to. Almost all of them are more than 3 hours long, and they are about things I don't know much about. Some video titles included unusual medieval cures for common illnesses, the entire history of the American frontier, what it was like to visit a brothel in Pompeii, and what getting wasted was like in medieval times. One of the channels has even been live streaming this history 24/7 for weeks. In the daytime, when I was not groggy and half asleep, it quickly became obvious to me that all of these videos are AI generated and that they are part of a sophisticated and growing AI slop content ecosystem that is flooding YouTube. Is drowning out human-made content created by real anthropologists and historians who spend weeks or months researching, fact-checking, scripting, recording, and editing their videos, and are quite literally rewriting history with service-level automated direct that the YouTube algorithm delivers to people. YouTube has said it will demonetize or otherwise crack down on these produced videos, but it is not clear whether that has had any sort of impact on the proliferation of AI-generated videos on the platform, and none of the people I spoke to for this article have noticed any change. It's completely shocking to me, Pete Kelly, who runs the popular History Time YouTube channel, told me in a phone interview. It used to be enough to spend your entire life researching, writing and narrating, editing, doing all of these things to make a video. But now someone can come along and they can do the same thing in a day instead of it taking 6 months, and the videos are not accurate. The visuals they use are completely inaccurate often, and I'm fearful because this is everywhere. I've kind of talked about this before, about the YouTube. It was a year or two ago, maybe two or three by now, but they did come out and say that they were going to enable this, so that, you know, because they wanted the AI slop videos, because they wanted content. They want people to constantly create content. And it's all for the almighty advertising dollar. And now, you know, they want to get this stuff so that they can create their own content. They can have their AIs create their own content, and they don't have to. They can drown out real people making real videos. And they don't have to do revenue shares with them. So you get that, right? They want YouTube to be creating your entertainment, your how-to videos, whatever, because they don't want to share the advertising revenue with real people. They want it for themselves. So they encourage the use of the AI generated slop, and then they're giving lip service to people that create it for them. So there you have it. There's that one. Hackers threaten to submit artist data to AI models if art site doesn't pay up. Artists and Clients, a website for connecting artists with gigs, is down after a group called LunaLock threatened to feed their data to AI datasets. Oh, fuck, it's not a free one. Damn it. I can't read that one. So, let's do another Chrome Crucifix. This one is, it's a instrumental, and it's basically a part two of Bloodlines of Solace. This is Solace of Solitude. Well, nope, I guess I gotta put it in the player, don't I? Here we go. Graham Lynam, arrested by armed police over X posts as UK free speech crisis deepens. A comedian once celebrated by absurdity is now caught in Britain's most absurd reality. There are many ways to return to Britain after a long-haul flight. Maybe you get a cup of tea, a mildly annoyed customs agent, and a taxi driver who tells you London's gone to hell. Or if you're Linhan, you're met at Heathrow by 5 armed officers who then take you into custody over things you wrote on the internet. The man who created Father Ted and the IT crowd, shows that helped define British humor, was arrested, detained, and taken to a hospital, all because of 3 tweets. He wrote later, "I was arrested at an airport like a terrorist, locked in a cell like a criminal, taken to hospital because the stress nearly killed me, and banned from speaking online." The Metropolitan Police confirmed that Linehan was arrested on suspicion of inciting violence related to posts he made on X. Armed officers from the Met's aviation unit escorted Linehan off a flight from Arizona and into custody. Okay, the tweets in question included one joke suggesting that a trans-identified male is found in a women's only space. People should make a scene, call the cops, and if all else fails, punch him in the balls. Another tweet featured a photo of a transgender rally with the caption, "A photo you can smell." A third read, "I hate them, misogynists, and homophobes." Fuck them. Linehan says he was taken to a holding cell, stripped of his belongings, and interrogated in detail about the tweets. "This isn't satire, this is modern Britain." At some point, Linehan's blood pressure spiked high enough that he had to be taken to the hospital. Not exactly how most comedy writers picture the fallout of posting online. I yawn a lot. At some point, he suspects the arrest wasn't spur of the moment. It was planned. Before he even left the U.S., something odd happened. At the gate in Arizona, he says, airline staff told him his seat was suddenly unavailable and he needed to be rebooked. At the time, he chalked it up to airline chaos. But later, reflecting on the timing, he wrote, "At the time, I thought it was just the sort of innocent snafu that makes air travel such a joy. But in hindsight, it was clear I'd been flagged." As for bail, it came only one condition. He's not allowed to use X. Linehan has also become a public enemy in some progressive circles and a hero in others. For years, he's spoken out against what he sees as the ideological overreach of gender activism. In the process, he's lost work, colleagues, and mainstream support. Linehan's arrest has unsurprisingly drawn criticism from those concerned about Britain's increasingly twitchy attitude towards online speech. Conservative MP Neil O'Brien called the incident laughable if it wasn't so serious, adding Britain is now a total laughingstock, a country where we arrest the authors of light comedies and interrogate them about their tweets. Linehan expressed disbelief at the force mobilized against him, especially when contrasted with the UK's handling of serious crime in a country where pedophiles escape sentencing, where knife crime is out of control, where women are assaulted and harassed every time they gather to speak. The state has mobilized 5 armed officers to arrest a comedy writer for this tweet. And no, I promise you, I am not making this up. Linehan said he initially laughed at the absurdity of the situation. "I couldn't help myself. Don't tell me you've been sent by the trans activists." While officers were professional, he noted that they seemed confused by the political nature of the arrest. "Entirely professional and even kind, but most had absolutely no idea what any of this was about." Though during questioning, Linehan said officers took his posts literally, ignoring the satirical context. "I explained that the punch tweet was a serious point made with a joke, certainly not a call to violence. when the officer referred to trans people, Lineham challenged the phrasing. Assigned at birth, our sex isn't assigned. He called it semantics. I told him he was using activist language. The stress of the arrest triggered a medical emergency. Eventually, a nurse came to check on me and found my blood pressure was over 200. Stroke territory. The stress of being arrested for jokes was literally threatening my life. Support for Linehan poured in almost immediately. J.K. Rowling, who has herself faced relentless backlash for her gender-critical positions, reacted to the news by writing, "What the fuck has the UK become? This is utterly deplorable." Others echoed her alarm. Elon Musk described Britain as a police state. Piers Morgan posted, "What's happened to Lineham today is absolutely ridiculous. Five armed cops arresting him at Heathrow for tweets mocking the scandal of biological men invading women's spaces. When it comes to free speech, Britain is turning into North Korea." Robert Jenrick, the Shadow of Justice Secretary, also condemned the operations, stating, "This is ridiculous and a complete waste of police time. The police only respond to 1 in 5 reported shoplifting offenses, but deployed 5 armed officers to arrest a comedian over 3 tweets. We desperately need to end this nonsense and go after criminals, after actual criminals." The Free Speech Union has stepped in, vowing to provide financial support for Lineham's legal defense, which is described as a response to preposterous allegations and a disproportionate response from the police. The UK is currently experiencing a free speech crisis, and this is only the latest example. One of the starkest recent examples is Lucy Connolly. She was sentenced to 31 months in prison for a single social media post about the Southport killings. Her case didn't surprise anyone paying attention. What happened to her is now part of standard enforcement. British police units are actively integrated with online monitoring tools. These systems flag content without the need for a complaint, though Lineham suspects his arrest was prompted by a complaint. Once flagged, police now follow up in person visits, arrests, and digital bans. The state has built a process for regulating speech without having to say so directly. You know that article we had earlier where the guy was talking about listening to YouTube videos when he falls asleep? I wonder how many people listen to my show to fall asleep. I know Jen does over there in London. But yeah. This is the legal and operational environment created by the Online Safety Act. The law was passed in 2023, came into force in 2024. It was announced as a proactive measure focused on child safety. The framing has not had... Oh, that framing has not held. Oh. The act gives regulators authority over any online content deemed harmful, even when it's not illegal. The language of the law is broad enough to allow intervention based on tone or framing. Lineham's arrest is not difficult to explain in the current legal context. Lineham is facing police interviews, a court case, and a ban from using X. Connolly served a prison sentence. Foreign websites are entering litigation with British regulators. The pattern is already visible. This used to be the kind of thing that happened elsewhere. It was the sort of legal system that British commentators once condemned on human rights grounds. But for Britons, it's not a foreign problem anymore. It's happening at Heathrow with 5 armed officers and a man who once wrote some of the best modern British sitcoms is now being interrogated like a criminal for online posts. Mm-hmm. Yep. In a follow-up story, Graham Lynam to sue Metropolitan Police over Heathrow arrest and online speech dispute. A surreal airport takedown over public tweets now threatens to put the Met itself on trial. Graham Lynam, the creator of Father Ted and the IT Crowd, is planning to sue the London Metropolitan Police after his arrest on Heathrow Airport over comments he made on social media. His detention, which involved, we said that already, the arrest stemmed from several posts Lynam made. Yeah, he's suing him, as he should. As he should. Nigel Farage warns U.S. Congress, U.K. censorship law threatens American free speech, encryption, and tech innovation. Farage turned a congressional hearing into a warning shot against Britain's digital authoritarianism. Man, I cannot pronounce words today. They're hard. Appearing before the House Judiciary Committee, British MP Nigel Farage issued a stark warning about Britain's trajectory in speech regulation, arguing that UK law now poses a direct threat not only to free expression at home, but also to core American liberties abroad. The testimony submitted to the U.S. Congress during a hearing titled Europe's Threat to American Speech and Innovation, the Reform Party leader detailed how the UK Online Safety Act, passed in 2023, is already being used to pressure American platforms into adopting restrictive UK speech codes, many of which would be flatly unconstitutional under the First Amendment. Farage said the OSA integrates the UK's abroad speech-related criminal offenses with sweeping duties imposed on online platforms. That authority, he warned, now includes the right to demand self-incriminating data from platform operators, punish noncompliance with up to 2 years imprisonment, and seek court orders to block access to noncompliant services. Ofcom has already threatened four American companies with exactly those penalties. I repeat, regulatory bodies in the UK are actively threatening to imprison American citizens for exercising their protected constitutional rights. This is not a hypothetical scenario. Just last week, two U.S.-based platforms filed suit in Washington, D.C., seeking protection against UK enforcement attempts. Their case shows the growing tension between the UK's now new speech suppression regime and America's longstanding protections for political and controversial speech. Under the OSA, the UK can extend its rules to any platform with links to the UK, a vague standard that includes merely having British users. Even if a platform has no physical or legal presence in the country, this creates what Farage calls powerful and unconstitutional extraterritorial pressures. Ofcom's fines, which can reach 10% of a company's global revenue, effectively forced international platforms to choose either conform to UK censorship demands or face financial ruin and bans within the UK market. Okay, I've got one question for you. Not you listening, but anybody that's listening. If I say fuck off, UK, and you try to sue me or Real Liberty Media or Liberty Tunes, and, or you don't try to sue me, but you try to fine me, what are you going to do if I don't pay that fucking fine? You can say that I owe you $10 million. But I ain't paying you ever $10 million. Fuck you, UK. Your laws don't come across this border. And if it's up to you, you don't have a right to shut me up. You have a right to not listen, but you don't have a right to shut anybody up. So there's last week I said it a couple of times, fuck you, UK. And I'm going to continue to say, fuck you, UK. not the UK people. I love the UK people. You guys are awesome. You got some of the funniest shit I've ever seen on TV. You got some great shows, great writers. Your people are great. But your government, when I say fuck any government or any country, I'm saying fuck the government. So just keep that in mind when you're listening. Three or four listeners in the UK. Well, probably more than that because Substack does track your ass. So just so you know. I can see where people are at that are accessing my content. Well, at least where the VPN comes out at. But I love my listeners. I love my viewers or whatever platform you're on. But I hate your fucking government. And your government's, my government's, geez, a hair bit better. Not much at all better. They let us get away with more shit. But, fuck the UK government. Yeah, just fuck the... Okay, I've got another story I was going to read. It was about the judge, their decision on the Google thing. I'll just give it to you in a short, condensed version. Google gets away with... They get away with everything. I mean, there's no fucking fine. They don't have to sell Chrome. They don't have to sell Android. They can just keep doing the same shit they've always been doing. And nothing changed. So, yeah, there was, it took them 230 fucking pages to say, Google, we know what you're doing, but we're okay with that. That's exactly what the fucking judge says. And they wasted 230 pages of paper saying that. So, don't worry, Chrome's going to still say, Android's going to keep continuing to vacuum up your data. And that's nothing's going to change. So, with that, this song, it's a good rocking song. This is when it comes to your kids and your family, you got to pay attention to them and protect them. You're the ones that's responsible for your kids. Don't let the government do it. Don't let the government use your kids as an excuse to take everybody's freedoms away. It's the Sentinel's hymn.
Oh, Kids, they're showing them how. We are the Sentinels, we sing a Sentinels hymn, a chorus of conviction that starts from within. Our shields are